Over the years, kids in New York City's five boroughs found a variety of ways to amuse themselves in the streets. They played and sometimes even invented games using whatever was at hand. Bottle caps, a stick, or a piece of chalk. Good morning. I'm George Boraki, and this is Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. Glad you're with us. Welcome to the games section of Cityscape, and we're talking about street games, stickball, handball, and stoop ball, the world where the Spalding ball met your mama's broom handle, and contact sports like Ringo Livio would leave your back hurting for days. Known as poor man's baseball, stickball was one of the most common street games. Kids used mop handles and broomsticks for bats, sewer lids and tires as bases, and the ubiquitous Spalding ball. Cityscape's Skylar Srivastava went out to the Bronx's very own Arthur Avenue and found a neighborhood boy more than happy to reminisce about his stickball days.
My name is Joe Vignola, and I came back here with my friend Erwin back to Arthur Avenue. It's probably been 25, 30 years, but I remember coming here with my parents, and when you can get a piece of pizza for 15 cents. We lived down two blocks down on Hoffman Street, and remember playing stickball in the street, and the sewer would be a base, right? And then also with my cousins, we would play stoop ball. That's where everybody would out in the stoop, and it was a neighborhood. It wasn't like everybody wasn't from the area.
Explain stoop ball to me. What is that?
You don't have a stoop in front of your house, so we would stand in front of it, and we would throw the ball. And we'd throw it off the steps, and it would go back, and either would be a single or double, and you would play with your cousins or your neighbors. We didn't have ball fields back then, so you found ways of playing, whether it was stickball, whether it was stoop ball, and, you know, you could get your mother's broomstick. You'd go there and take your mother's broomstick because you couldn't buy a bat. You didn't have the money. And a little Spalding ball that you can buy in the corner candy store.
You must have a flash of memories coming back for you right now.
As we go through it, yes. I mean, times were much different. It was more family, more friends. When you lived on a block, you knew everybody. As compared to where I live now, I don't know anybody on my road, right? Everybody was more together, and it made a big difference. When they said a neighborhood, it was a neighborhood. Everybody knew each other, and everybody helped each other. Now, people just turn their head and walk away, probably. And, you know, you go back into people my age in the Bronx was something very, very special. And coming back here, I can almost sense it again. I haven't been back to Arthur Avenue in years. But you can feel just the warmth of the people as we walk by. So it's nice to be back.
When you think stickball, you think kids calling out, car, car. That's what most kids would scream at each other when they played out on the streets of New York City. And it's something that just doesn't happen much anymore. But Cityscape's Kate McGee says some New Yorkers still haven't given up their playing days.
My name is Emil Rosario. They call me Junior. I've been playing stickball for 40, 50 years. When I was growing up, we were very poor. And the only thing I could afford was a broomstick and Spalding. They have leagues now for younger players, which is great because they kept the tradition of stickball going, which is this.
Junior is talking about the New York Emperor Stickball League. Players range in age from 16 to 70. Every Sunday between May and September, they can be found on Stickball Boulevard in the Bronx, a street they renamed in 1985 when the league was founded.
The street used to be named Newman Avenue. A couple of guys got together, and with the help of some politicians, we got the street name changed to Stickball Boulevard.
That's Dave Hernandez, a member of the league for a decade. He plays on one of the league's nine teams. There are about 16 men on each team. Only one has a woman. Jennifer Lipple grew up watching her father play stickball. She's earned her stripes, but says it took some time.
Trash talking of them telling me my kids are running in the street and shouldn't I be cooking rice and beans? You want them to actually talk trash because basically they're saying that you're one of the guys.
Trash talking is normal on and off the field during games, according to Tino Santana.
It's all fun. We trash talk, but we don't disrespect anybody.
Now, this particular Sunday is the last day of regular season play. Temperatures are in the mid-90s, and player Dave Hernandez explains that tension is running high.
Well, right now we're playing for seeding. There's nine teams in the league. The top eight make it, so that means there's one team that's not going to make it. Like, we already know gold. Gold is in first place. They're, like, the best team in the league. And everybody else is trying to fall into place, seeing who matches up with who.
Nice shot, Jay!
Go, fellas.
Let's put the ball in play. The first one hit at a big one. Let's get on.
The Royals are about to play the Ravens for home field advantage in the playoffs. Like many teams, players in the Royals span generations.
Don't think about it. Just go hard. That's it, right?
Nothing to lose. Everything's
a game. 1, 2, 3, run!
Rookie Christian Lazaro is a high school junior who got involved with stickball through his uncle Tino.
The Royals. It's a family team. My cousins, all my brother, uncle, we all play here.
And that gets him a lot of support when he's up at bat.
Go, Chris! Go, Chris, go!
That's it.
And on Stickball Boulevard, it certainly is all about family. The old-timers are fathers and teammates are brothers. And like most families, they've experienced hardship and loss. On September 11, 2001, the league's president, Steve McCardo, died in the World Trade Center. His brother, Lewis, says the league has been a source of comfort for him.
You know, being the family and the community that it is, have always cherished my brother and my family, which we are truly grateful for. It never amounts to the loss, but, you know, just having the hearts and prayers of people help.
That afternoon, the Royals fail to beat the Ravens. They finish in fifth place, but still head to the playoffs. Royals player Israel Torres says it's not over.
We beat them first game in the season, and we lost them the last two games, so it's redemption. We're ready for next week.
And while everyone agrees stickball is competitive, player Abby Santiago says a lot of it's simply about preserving the game as part of Bronx culture.
We have a kids league that we start up at the end of every season in September. We teach the kids the game. We have clinics for the kids to learn. And then we break them up into teams and we have a season so we can keep the game going. You know, we want to keep the kids off the street. We want to show them that, you know, there's something for them to do constructive outdoors.
The league ends the season at a tournament in Puerto Rico, Labor Day weekend. With Cityscape, I'm Kate McGee.
One neighborhood kid has returned to his roots with a new documentary. It's all about the street game, who played it, where they played, and what brought these kids together back in the day. Narrated by Hector Elizondo, the DVD is filled with stories from celebrities like Regis Philbin, Ray Romano, and Mike Starr, who grew up right here in New York City. Producer and director Matt Levy says his film captures a special time in American history. I recently spoke with him and character actor Mike Starr. We welcome now to Cityscape Matt Levy and Mike Starr. Matt is the director, producer of a new documentary called New York Street Games. And Mike is in that movie. He's also a native New Yorker, played these street games as a kid. Not well.
No, sorry.
Matt, welcome.
Thank you. How are you, George?
Good. Mike, glad you're here in the studio with us.
Oh, yeah. And I'm wearing sunglasses.
There you go.
Cool.
It's the bright lights of the big studio. Matt, let's start with you. Are you native to New York City?
Yeah, I was born and raised in the Bronx, in Parkchester as a child.
Why make this movie?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine about 5 or 6 years ago, and we were talking about our childhood. We both realized we had commonalities about our childhoods. He was from Brooklyn, and I just decided, you know, the world needs to know about this great little story about how all New Yorkers played all these wonderful games in different neighborhoods in the community. But that was, you know, the stories are so similar, and I said, you know what? Let me start putting this movie together, and found a lot of good people such as Mike Starr and Regis Philbin and Whoopi Goldberg and Ray Romano, and just started talking to these
people.
C.
Everett Koop.
Yeah, Dr. C. Everett Koop, and talked Joey Pantoliano, just to get stories of their childhood. It just it turned into something that was just so unique, you know.
Mike, where did you grow up in New York City?
Flushing, Queens. It's called Pamanoc Housing Projects, right next to the Electricians Union Projects. We were considered farmers to the people from Brooklyn, and there were so many people in one area, which was great. I must have had, just in my little court area, 12 kids my age. It was very easy to organize a lot of sports in this, everything from stickball to ring-a-levio to punchball. So you could do things, as Ray Romano's very funny, and play just with one kid, or you could play with about 30.
Yeah, that was a great thing growing up in the inner cities, is that, yeah. You know, when I lived in the Bronx, you just walk outside, there was 100 kids on your block playing all these different games. It was like, you know, you never had to worry about what to do during the day. You know, it was just lots of play.
Or the night.
Yeah, right. It's sort of unfortunate. Your movie ends talking about where we are today, and Regis actually talks about how there are no kids in the old neighborhood in the Bronx anymore.
People are afraid to let their children outside, and that's an issue in today's world. I mean, the world is just as dangerous 30, 40 years ago as it is now. The difference is that now, because of the advent of the Internet and quick information, people are worried to let their kids out. You know what? kids need to run around and play. They need to go outside and do all these things, because it's not just about the play and the fun and the games. You know, the lack of social skills these kids have today by just sitting in front of a computer instead of interacting with other kids, it's an issue. And because of that, you know, one in four kids in this country has obesity problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
The entire community, though, was watching when you guys were out there playing these street games, right?
As it points out in the film.
Yes, they were. We had a whole section of the movie that. Thank God the whole entire community wasn't watching out on all the bad things that Mike and I did as a kid. But, you know.
Two things was that we didn't have air conditioning. So people just sat out on the benches of all ages till...
Well, wait a second, Mike. I thought back in the day they didn't have cars. They had, like, cars and horses.
No,
also.
Car. You had to yell out, car. But in the film, they show the neighborhoods where you played on the street, mm-hmm. like Robert Klein would talk about, which is tremendous in the film. And mine, it was just... there was grass, trees, but also a lot of concrete. And you didn't tend to play most of the games in the road because... They were Parsons Boulevard and Jewel Avenue. They were quite fast streets, so your tendency was to play through the projects themselves. And there was a creativity that was necessitated by our situations, the way you had to adjust and create games around what you had. And the amazing thing is I get a call from Matt. I'm in L.A., and Matt goes, "You know where I'm at?" I said, "No." "Wisconsin, at a stoop ball tournament."
Yeah, that's pretty incredible, actually.
That's pretty bizarre.
This is in the film. There's
film
a guy who has
nothing
this
you'd expect.
Stoop ball league in Wisconsin.
We drove to rural Wisconsin. I mean, it's in the middle of a cornfield. And if you've seen the movie Field of Dreams, this is identical. He built three stoop ball stadiums under lights with bleachers. And every year, between 300 and 500 people come up from around the country, literally pitch tents on his property.
They did come. He built it and they came.
Concession stands and it's just an amazing thing to see because I grew up in the Bronx playing stoop ball. Mike grew up in Queens playing stoop ball. And then to see this in Wisconsin, you know, 30, 40, 50 years later, it was just bizarre.
You can take the boy out of the city, but you can't take the city out of the boy.
Absolutely.
There was so much that when I went to see the movie, I was like a little kid because I didn't expect. I figured interviews, some of us playing stickball or whatever, but I didn't know the history of Johnny on the Pony. We all thought... Every neighborhood, whether it was the Bronx, Queens, Brooklyn, whatever, everybody thought they created Ring Alivio with Johnny on the Pony.
You know what I'm thinking about as we're talking about these games is the fact that there are a lot of people listening to us right now that have no idea what we're talking about.
So I'll give you a little flavor. Well, Johnny on a Pony is a perfect game. They call it Buck Buck in Brooklyn. They call it Johnny on the Pony in the Bronx. So it's the same game, different names. There was five kids in each team. So five kids, let's say they line up against the wall. One guy would stand against the wall with his back against the wall. And the other four guys would bend over and make like an archway of their back. And the other team of five guys would run and jump on top of the pony. The guy who jumped first, who was the flyer, trying to get as front of the pony as possible, and everybody would pile on their back, and the goal was to knock the other guys down. Now, if you were the guys holding them up, your goal was not to let them knock you down, you know? And, you know, then you had to guess how many people were on your back. That was Johnny on a Pony. It was a game we thought was invented in New York. When I did my investigation, when I made the film, there was a Flemish painter by the name of Bruegel, back in the 1500s, actually documented about 100 different games that were played from ancient Greece and Rome. And Johnny on the Pony actually came from ancient Greece. It was a game called Long Horse that they were playing 500 years ago.
Ring Alivio was basically you had these two teams, and they ran out, and you had to catch people. There's a base, a home base. They have to free people, and people would get a running start of about 20 yards and go leaping into this wall to free the home base. And I remember seeing a guy just tackle a guy, a form tackle, that he could have got a scholarship to Alabama. It was such a beautiful tackle before him, and all on concrete.
I got to tell you something. There's a lot of great things that come out of, you know, growing up in New York City, like two-hand touch. We would play tackle two-hand touch football in the middle of concrete streets.
Sure.
And I've met people that actually can turn on a dime because of that. You know, where an NFL player couldn't, because it was part of their, you know, part of their architecture, sure, of their neighborhood, you know? So a lot of these games come out of wartime, either wartime or baseball, like stoop ball and stick ball and punch ball and three-box baseball and slap ball. They're all derivatives of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And kids didn't have money. You know, they were playing with rocks or with a Spalding ball or a pinky. So, you know, you had to use whatever you can get your hands on because no one had money.
You mentioned the Spalding ball. You couldn't play a lot of these games without it.
Yeah, well, that was
the high-end one.
That was the high-end one. That was the sports implement, as Bob Abrams, the former New York Attorney General, said, you know.
Now, we're saying Spalding when, in fact, it's actually Spalding.
Well, right. The Spalding Company started out of Massachusetts, and Spalding, not called Spalding, was making tennis balls, and they made a bunch of batches of tennis balls that weren't perfect. They went out of round, so they didn't know what to do with all these balls they had without fuzz on them. So they actually put them in vats and shipped them from Massachusetts to bodegas in New York City, and it became like a phenomenon among kids in the city, you know.
And the tennis ball was great to play with if you can afford one,
right?
Because you could do more with it, and then people wound up shaving the tennis ball.
Right. I used to take a lighter, Mike, and burn the fuzz off it. That's what I used to do, because I didn't want to play with a regular tennis ball. It was too good for me. I was a kid from the Bronx. I wanted a Spalding.
Where did you guys get your bats for stickball?
You know, baseball bats were expensive. We weren't kids that had many means. So what you would do is you'd go into your mother's kitchen, to the cupboard, you'd take a broomstick or a mop, and you take the wood piece off it, adjusted by sawing it down against the curb or the sewer, and you put some electrical tape, and there's your baseball bat.
Vinny Vella from Casino tells the funniest story about, he said, what a beating I got the first day I sawed that mop off of the broom.
Do you guys remember how your moms called you back for dinner when you were out there playing in the street?
Yeah, my mother was very good at whistling. She used to put her two fingers, she'd make like an O with her two fingers, and put it under her tongue, and open the window, and just put a big whistle out the window. And I recognized her whistle, you know, so I knew she was calling me. You know, the thing about kids is we'd wake up on a Saturday morning, and we'd be outside at 7 o'clock in the morning till 7 o'clock at night, till it got dark. And then your mother would whistle, you run upstairs, you get your supper, and then as soon as you're done with supper, you go down and play night games like Ring Alivio and different other games, you know.
I remember one time my mother would go, Michael, come on up, you know, and then she could whistle, but not really that well. I'll never forget. I kept saying, come 5 minutes, Ma, you know, seventh inning, eighth inning, whatever. My father, who was a quiet man, very low-key, classy guy from Massachusetts, but he bellowed like Ralph Cramden one day. He just went, up here! I think about 19 kids ran to my apartment.
Funny. It was about one thing as a child, natural play, getting outside and having fun and interaction. The problem with today is you don't have that same thing where the kids are outside playing all day long. I think that we need to get back to the simple things in life. Let kids play. Get them outside. Get them active.
Let me ask you, what skills do you think that you guys learned that you still use today?
There is something about winning and losing and whatnot and disappointment and dealing with it. And
learning how to negotiate with, you know, if you can negotiate in circumstances where you're playing athletics and games, you won't have a problem negotiating later in life. And if a kid's sitting in front of a video game for 6 hours a day, I don't know if he's negotiating with anybody, you know. There's another part of it also that, you know, we live in a very litigious society today, George.
Yes.
And if you noticed, not just around New York City, but around the country, schoolyards are locked when school is over. They don't want kids playing on schoolyard grounds for fear of, you know, lawsuits because we're living in a litigious society. Well, me growing up, I played in the schoolyard all the time. If I was in the street, I was in the schoolyard. It was like a recreation center for kids. No longer. That's a problem, you know?
You know what's great about the film, Matt, is the fact that you got people like Mike to talk about it, but how fond their memories are.
Yes.
Whoopi Goldberg, I think it was, she smelled the Spalding ball.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that was cool.
She wasn't the only one. I have 125 hours of the footage where 90% of the people that I put a Spalding in their hand, the first thing they do is they put it to their nose and smell it because it reminds them of, it's like smelling a pretzel at Yankee Stadium. It just reminds you of that place, you know?
What for each of you was your favorite game to play growing up?
I was a baseball player, so I mean, I was a big stickball player. Yeah. I also loved Johnny and the Pony. I mean, but I was a stickball fiend.
Mike,
I would have to say stickball, and I did like Ring Alivio. I think that was an exciting game. Love the stoop ball, you know.
Let me ask this question of you guys too: how many sewers?
you want me to lie? You want to tell the truth? I was probably close to a 3 sewer guy.
Wow.
You know, I was a good ball player.
Just to clarify here, we're talking about how many manholes you hit the ball over.
Right, and the funny thing about New York City is, for the most part, the different neighborhoods have different space between them.
Yes.
But a good average is about 100 feet between each sewer, between each manhole, 80 to 100 feet.
Mike Starr, thanks so much for coming in. Matt Levy, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, George.
The DVD comes with a Street Games rulebook. You can find out more at NewYorkStreetGames.com. You're tuned to Cityscape on 90.7 FM and WFUV.org. I'm George Boldarkey. This morning, we're going back to the neighborhood streets where kids would play games from Kick the Can to Scully, and the cultural importance of these games and the sense of community they engendered. That's one of the reasons New York City Parks Commissioner Adrian Benepy wants to bring the experience back. Commissioner Benepy, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us on Cityscape.
It's always a great pleasure to talk to WFUV and Cityscape.
Now, take us back to your childhood. Where in New York City did you grow up?
I grew up on the Upper West Side. A lot of different locations between West 95th Street and West 107th Street, between Amsterdam and Broadway.
Did you play outside a lot?
I played outside a lot. Luckily, we had Riverside Park right across the street, and we also had this little place called Strauss Park, and we had a couple of schoolyards. But I did actually spend a lot of time hanging out on my block, which was a fairly steep hill, so it didn't lend itself to games like stickball, but we did hang out.
I would imagine you had a lot of sleigh riding then.
A lot of sleigh riding on what we called Suicide Hill. Riverside Park was called Suicide Hill because there were a lot of trees. And nobody actually died, but a lot of bloody heads. There was no sleigh riding on our hill because you would have ended up crashing into the retaining wall on the Riverside Drive service road. And also there's a fair amount of traffic. But we did have there's one level spot where we could play what we call Chinese handball.
And for those not familiar with Chinese handball, what are the rules there? How do you play it?
Well, it's played with, of course, it was played with a Spalding. You had to have a Spalding.
Not a Spalding, but a Spalding.
Spalding. And I don't know why it was. It was Spalding. You didn't call it Spalding. Even though it was spelled Spalding, it was that pink rubber ball. And you played it, you needed sidewalk squares, and you needed a flat wall against which to bounce the ball. And it was basically handball played on the bounce. It had to bounce before it hit the wall. And each player had a box, and you were ace, king, queen, jack, and so on, depending on the number of players. And the idea was to bounce the ball against the wall into an opponent's box so that the opponent couldn't return it, and work your way up and try to stake ace as often as possible. And if you missed, you'd go back down to the lowest rung. And we used to play that by the hour. It was a lot of fun. And I developed a kill shot where I would spin the ball with both hands, get a reverse spin going on, and then undercut it so it would just hit the wall and die. I got pretty good at that.
How many kids do you remember being out on the streets back then?
Well, there was a gang of us that used to hang around in the corner. This was really the sort of mid to late 60s, and there was always kids hanging out in the corner. And the difficulty was it wasn't like some of the more quiet neighborhoods like out in Brooklyn someplace. There was a fair amount of traffic because you were not too far from the West Side Highway, and it was Broadway two blocks away. So you couldn't play safely in the streets. But we used to hang out on the stoop a lot. I lived in a house eventually that had a stoop, and my fondest memories are of not doing anything particularly active, but what we call stoop hanging, just hanging out on the stoop and watching the neighborhood go by.
We did that in the Bronx, too.
Yeah. And then things, as I got to become a teenager, the neighborhood got a little bit rougher, and one of our activities was occasionally chasing purse snatchers. So you'd be out hanging out on the stoop late at night, and someone would snatch a purse, and you'd try to chase the person down and get the purse back.
There's an entirely different kind of street game.
That was a different kind of street game. It was a little bit more dangerous, and I gave that up eventually, but that was a fun sport.
What would you say, Commissioner, were among the biggest lessons you learned by playing as a kid on the streets and the parks of New York City?
I think what I learned was how to get along with people. And the gang that we hung out with in our corner was really quite multi-ethnic. It was white and black and Hispanic, and it was also different genders, boys and girls playing together. So you really learned how to get along with different kinds of people and also people of different economic backgrounds. And we all just hung out. That's the way it was. You learn how to get along and play tough without getting into fights. And learning how to get along with people and make friends on the streets, in those games, and on the courts probably has served me very well in politics. You know, you learn how to get along with a bunch of different kind of people. You have things you can talk about in common. And also you don't take a slight as a personal offense. You know, some insults you, hey, it's part of politics, and you just let it go and keep a focus on whatever the bigger goal is, whether it's winning that basketball game so you can stay on the court or, making something work politically.
Now, here you are, the commissioner of the New York City Parks Department, bringing back some of the old-fashioned street games to the kids of New York City.
Well, you know, part of our job is to get kids get out into parks, having fun and getting exercise. These games, in addition to providing exercise, which is important. We got a lot of natural exercise in those days. They're also very much about building community.
So in parks throughout Brooklyn, through the end of the month, you can play games like Scully, and you could do pogo sticking, right?
Yeah, you can do tag. We have a bunch of different things through the end of the month. We culminate the summer with a Skelly Fest. I have to confess, I never played Skelly. We didn't.
You say Skelly, I say Scully. I'm from the Bronx.
Skelly, Scully. Let's. Either way, it's a fun game. If these kids enjoy it, kids have an amazing capacity to teach things to other kids. There's a whole body of knowledge, including poems, which I cannot recite because they're impolite for broadcast, that you learn from other kids, all kinds of things that you learn from other kids. That's the amazing thing. It's kid to kid, not adult to kid. It's not this didactic thing from a teacher. It's what one kid teaches another. And if we do a little bit of didactic education, teach the kids the old-fashioned games, maybe they'll pass them on along, and these games will stay alive for another few generations.
Commissioner, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome. And let's see you come out and play Scully, or is it Skelly?
The Brooklyn Street Games Tour has events all over the borough until August 27th. For more information about exact locations and times, check out nycgovparks.org. And speaking of bringing games back to the old neighborhoods, we found several parks that have long been home to the sport of handball. The handball courts are usually the most populated area of any park, with young teens and old-timers alike whacking a rubber ball against a wall. We caught up with some of them at Orchard Beach Park right here in the Bronx.
Handball is the ultimate pure sport. It takes total body control, total physical and mental control. It's New York City's pastime. Every kid in school at some point or another played handball. It's a great sport. I mean, you have kids, you know, and the kids as young as their early teens and adults into their 60s and 70s.
I'm 52. I've been playing on and off, I don't know, 18 years.
My name is Juan Portella. I'm from the Pelham Bay area in the Bronx. And I come here once in a while to, you know, relax and play some great games against some great guys.
Hi, my name is Ruben Sebastian. I'm a retired player. Handball is the greatest sport of all sports. I'll tell you why. In baseball, you need a team. In football, you need a team. In volleyball, you need a team. But handball, you don't need a team. You can play with a team or by yourself solo.
When I used to play, I played in the late 70s. Where the ball was a better ball. They used to, Spalding was the brand, and we used to call it the pink ball because it looked pinkish, and it was just a better bounce.
It's a real New York City sport. Okay, it's, people have been playing handball in New York City since the early 1900s. We're enemies on the court, friends off the court, and brothers for life.
And finally, before we go, Cityscape's Skylar Srivastava heads back to Arthur Avenue, where there are still fond memories of the days when things were simpler.
My name is Angelo. I've been here for about since 68, and I live in Prospect Avenue. And I remember the first time of stickballs was about 71, 75, in that range.
What's your name?
It's Stan Pitti, last name.
And you used to play with Angela.
We used to play together. We used to play with other people on Hughes Avenue. And we remember we used to play stickball on the corner.
So you guys basically grew up together, right, Angela?
Yes, most of the time we used to play handball, stickball. So.
Do you ever consider doing another game of stickball this weekend?
I'll be very honest with you. You know, it's going to be difficult to say. There's no players. It's not like years ago, let's say, we would start a game. Others will come over. Can we play? Sure, why not? It's not a problem. We used to go from the one side of the block to the other side just to play stickball itself.
What's happened now? What's different?
There's no stickball. That's the reason why.
The simple things were the best things, I guess. It's very hard to explain, you know, going back so many years now, at least 40 years.
It's true. It's amazing. So many things changed because at those times, sitting out, talking with people, participating. The attitude of the people are different.
We know where we came from. And you know what? We're still able to look back at the neighborhood and say, you know, we did a good job so far.
That's true about that, yes.
And that's it for this week's Cityscape. Remember, you can get past editions of Cityscape and to learn how to podcast the show at WFUV.org. We're also now on Facebook and Twitter, listed as WFUV's Cityscape. Sign up, become a fan, and a follower. You'll feel good about it. I'm George Bodarkey. My thanks to senior producer Skylar Srivastava and producer Maureen Chin. Have a great weekend.